community.
Being among others.
A representation of our expanded strength.
Yeah. Identity crisis.
And inability to be exterminated.
Being brave and being stronger together.
Being together.
Being stuck between two identities.
Pride and bravery.
Stuart Hall's books.
Family and...
I don't know.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this episode of Diaspora Diaries. I hope everyone's good. I'm really excited to get into this episode on internalized misogyny, and I thought who better to have this conversation with than with my good friend Nadia. Yay!
Thank you for having me. Honored.
But before we get into it, we have to go through formalities. Mm-hmm. I'm Stephanie, I go by she, her, and last time I was here, I asked, where is your home? But this time, I'm still going to ask that question, but I'm also going to ask, what is your relation to the diaspora? So for me, my home, I would say, is London, where my family is, and also Congo, where my family is. But then I would say I'm a member of the Congolese diaspora, or I'm a member of the African second generation immigrant diaspora, if that makes sense. So where's home to you, and what is your connections with the diaspora, considering this is Diaspora Diaries? So...
Okay, well, I'm Nadia. I also go by she, her. I would say my home right now is South Africa. And I think...
Sorry, I just keep thinking. You're never been a pretty girl. Don't work. Okay, Tyler.
I would say my home right now is South Africa. I guess in the technical sense, I am the diaspora, but I would say I'd have the fortune of being able to go home. My dad's from Lesotho and my mom's from Malaysia, but I've had the fortune to be able to visit home annually to either or. So I think the concept of being identifying as diasporic feels a bit mislabeling.
Because do you mean in the sense that diaspora only... is only in relation to being away from home and staying away?
Well, I think in my head for diaspora, it seems a bit more permanent. The whole idea of being diasporic is quite recent. I don't know. We'll leave it to the public.
You comment down below. What do you think? Where do you think she's from? Does she connect to the diaspora?
Can I claim it? I feel like this term, for some reason...
term as in being term two.
Yes, term two, I think, for us has been quite an awakening. Like, I feel like, I don't know why, maybe it's like, I haven't had a huge hit of internalized misogyny until recently in my mid-20s.
Oh, just to preference, she's older than me.
Okay. I'm joking. Okay. Anyways. You seem like I'm pushing 30. I'm actually 24. Stephanie is 22, going on 23. But I think for me, I guess why I think Stephanie probably brought me on was because I feel like a few months ago I was really battling with some internalized misogyny. Well, where do we start?
I was going to start with what's happened recently with the UK Supreme Court. And how they ruled the legal definition of a woman is based on biological sex. And their framing of it was, this can help protect women from, like, women in the gym, women in healthcare, and especially protect refugee women. Like, the UK ever give a fuck about refugee women or immigrants or etc. Surely this whole transphobia can also be linked to misogyny and also be understood as misogyny as well. What's your take on internalized misogyny, how do you comprehend it?
Well, I was, prior to this, doing a lot of thinking about what is the difference between internalized sexism and internalized misogyny.
But didn't internalized sexism, that was the old way of saying internalized misogyny. All the scholars in the past would call it internalized sexism, not internalized misogyny.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking, because I've always understood it as internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
I think I was just thought it's a bit more violent compared to internalized... you're right, you're 100% right, and that's like what came up. I think internalized misogyny for me is when I kind of remove any sort of agency from self, and what I mean by that is that when standards that are aligned with the patriarchal agenda, if that makes sense. I think it's also when I reduce myself to just being a woman. and hold myself in alignment with societal expectations of that. I know that's not very clear, but it was interesting because when I was thinking about the whole idea of internalized misogyny and why we were speaking about it so much recently, because it's not a new thing, I think, especially cis or not, like internalized misogyny, I think is something that's just very much anyone who identifies as a woman experiences. Mm-hmm. I think internalized misogyny, well, my theory is basically what I was going to say is, because I realize like it's not the first time, it's not like I only at 24 have felt internalized misogyny. Yeah. It's not like, you know, I've been like fully feminist and been empowered with myself since I've been young. No, like I think that what's different, because I thought about, because I went to an all-girls school, and anyone who's been to an all-girls school,
yes,
it's pungent with internalized misogyny. And I just realized that what's changed is that I think at a younger age for me or in high school, it was just very normalized to hate yourself and this, and by extension, hate yourself as a woman. I think there's a lot of shame that you, that is normalized as young women and that you've just learned to get used to it. But I guess as I've gotten older and educated myself and become more confident and more empowered, I guess can recognize those instances where those instances of self-internalized misogyny manifest. And I guess that's why it was so so big for us to talk about it, because I guess I was like, oh, I'm 24 and I still have the same thoughts I had at 15.
But then also, I think for me it was more like, I can be accountable and say that I've had some internalized misogynist thoughts, especially if I make self-deprecating remarks about myself. Mind you, just before people are like, "Oh, so you're insecure?" No, I'm not. just gonna add everybody. Lent is over. Lent's over. Back to myself. Thank you. No, but it's like when I make self-deprecating remarks about myself, I think that is a manifestation of internalized misogyny. Mm. But how I come to understand it is, it's not like simply being like, "I hate women." Like, we're kind of competing against each other. Like, women shame other women's promiscuity. The because is to be palatable to a man. Mm. Whereas a woman doing that, that goes against, like, traditional notions or traditional gender notions of what a woman's supposed to be. Mm. So a woman's not supposed to be promiscuous. A woman's not supposed to be sexual.
And I definitely think those are things that have come with getting older. And I think that's why I was so shocked with... Why was I shocked? But I guess I was, like, why... realizing that I still have so much internalized misogyny within was so shocking at 24, because I thought, I obviously feel like I've grown since I was 12, but I guess, like you said, the issues or the things you deal with at like 24 are very different, you know, in terms of like, sorry mom and dad if you're listening, in terms of things of sex and dating and not that I partake, but in theory, and the expectations I think of like motherhood and like work-life balance, which I think become very real as you approach your 30s for some of us. And not that I per se hold those expectations to myself at all. Like I don't think my life as being a woman should be at all dictated by motherhood or traditional expectations, but it is still a thought, unfortunately, you still have.
I wrote a list.
Okay.
I think it's hard to pinpoint examples of internalized misogyny.
Yes.
Or how it manifests. Because everyone talks about misogyny. So I wrote a list.
Okay. Of your instances?
Of what? But these are things that I think are internally misogynist.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we can add to the list, or we can speak about it, or you can contest my list.
Contest.
One, sometimes it can come out as being jealous of another woman. That's how it manifests.
Women in competition.
Mm-hmm. Judging other women.
Mm-hmm.
Passive acceptance of outdated gender roles without actually questioning it, or judging other women. It goes back to judging, but judging other women for not aligning to those gender norms.
Well, I think traditionally, especially in conjunction to a side story. Speaking of traditional, the reason why I can speak to this is because recently my dad had gotten a little argument with this woman who's a first wave feminist, and the topic of gender roles came up, and they were speaking about the whole, because she was basically, this woman's whole point, first of all, She's like anti-vax, homophobic, transphobic.
Oh.
She's ticking all the boxes.
Mm.
And she was talking about how she doesn't date men anymore because she's like in her mid-30s, and how she has found from previously being married that she doesn't date men anymore because she finds herself in relationships where she's often being the baby or being the mothering men. And she was basically talking about how, you know, a lot of men want to be traditional and, you know, be the man in the relationship, but in real life that doesn't manifest. Basically, then my dad was speaking about the idea of being a traditional man and yada yada. But from what he said, or from what the conversation, what I understand general rules, I understand man goes out, you know, it's man, very primitive.
Man goes out.
Man goes out.
Gather food,
get a money, support wife, make babies. Cook clean.
Baby help capitalism.
Literally, you know, man want to build kinship. Back to your list.
Yeah, making self-deprecating remarks on the self.
Mm-hmm.
Fat phobia.
Yes.
Anything else you want to add to the list of examples?
I think, this is going to trigger a few people. I feel like I should get a sound. Oh, yeah, so trigger warning. But something that I've noticed that I think is quite, that maybe is maybe more relevant now with globalization and social media usage is, I felt like a man when I was about to say, is when women use excuses of having standards as a way to put down other women.
We're clicking, by the way.
Yeah. And.
Yes.
You know, like, women shaming other women for, especially, like, for being in toxic relationships, or victim blaming, or I would say what I've seen a lot is, you know, I guess when your standards for what you want in a partner, and that partner being a man, a cis man, doesn't line up with another woman's, I guess, idea of a good relationship, she then, I think, bashes the woman. I think there's a lot of bashing of women rather than, like, holding men accountable. And this is something I've spoken about with Stephanie as, you know, my token London friend.
Hang on, bring me.
But I've noticed that, like, obviously, understandably, the social culture here is very different from the social culture in, like, Australia, which is where I moved from, or South Africa, I would say. It's a bit more strict here.
Mm.
And it's a bit more strict here amongst the girlies.
Mm.
I feel like finding female allyship has been quite different to navigate to other contexts. Not that it doesn't exist, met amazing London girlies, but I think in terms of the perception of how you have to hold yourself as a woman in public is quite strict.
Especially how you hold yourself around men.
Woo! Y'all are strict. A girl can't laugh with a man. God forbid.
God forbid I flirt. God forbid I help the DJ pack up.
You can't do
that. I can't do that.
Access service? Yeah. God forbid I help him get home. My point is with saying this is that I think that's what made me think a lot about the topic of internalized misogyny. Because for context, I feel like back home in South Africa, like, everyone's a bit of a flirt. Especially December time, it's a free-for-all.
So for me, I would say to be internally misogynist, the end goal is to be palatable for men. And then this is me understanding that patriarchy is the problem. And that's how I came to unlearn internalized misogyny.
And just to bring it back to the diaspora.
Yeah.
Because I would say, if I'm being honest, I'm very fortunate. I grew up did most of my high schooling and my formative years in South Africa. And I think what you're talking about, I agree. The goal of misogyny at the end of the day is to be palatable to men.
But
in the diaspora, I think that the man changes. Like, I think, for example, in the diaspora, the whole, you're being not only palatable to men, but you're being palatable to white people, white beauty standards. Because I think the beauty standards I grew up with are very different. Like, I think, like, when I moved to Europe, for example, as I was older, I didn't get what the issue was with having big lips, a big bum. I didn't grow up with those nuances, I think, of beauty standards. The beauty standards I grew up with were very different.
wait, like the patriarchy is rooted in capitalist endeavor, imperialism, colonial imagery.
Mm.
But I didn't touch on being palatable to men was also being palatable to whiteness.
Mm.
But that's also internalized misogyny as well. But then I was like, is that not misogynoir?
But I guess also at the end of the day, you also need to think about how you center. Because I think when you're dealing with internalized misogyny and when you're thinking about how to appease it, I think what you're trying to appease is different. Like, I feel like, for example, the girls I grew up, like my friends who I know grew up in very white areas, their goal was to be a palatable black girl to white people, let alone white men. Like, but I meant in terms of, like, I guess when what I understand from you saying being palatable to men, I meant, I think, I assume you mean in also a very, like, sexual desire way.
Yeah, that too.
And I think that, like, for example, like, for my friends who grew up in white, in very, like, white societies, like, they wanted to be sexually desirable to white men. Like, I know the black girls who grew up in those areas was to be the most palatable black girl. If you could be, if a white man could find you attractive, you had reached peak. You were like peak woman, you know?
Yeah.
Versus that was never something for me. Like growing up in South Africa, I never was like, I want to be a white man's desire.
Conservatism is on the rise.
Take a moment.
Let's take a moment for our fallen angels. Everybody held someone's hand.
Oh.
But conservatism
is on the rise.
I don't know, there's a lot of sentiment online, but I just think this links back to surveillance and panopticism and like the idea that we see everybody all the time. Literally all the time. We see everybody's lives all the time, and the ordinary has become more pervasive.
Let's talk about TikTok vlogs.
Hey!
Day in my life.
Ooh. Everyone says it's linked to the social event of Trump being president, and that has just now everybody's alt-right.
Also, just what's it called, just a little thing, I think the rise of conservatism has also existed pre-Trump, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But obviously I think a lot of people who make those arguments of it being only existed now that Trump's in power, I think it's also very American-centric.
But I also think it's more blatant now, but especially in the UK when we had the far-right riots last summer, that was more blatant because everyone thought this was an old phenomenon, but no, it's a recurring phenomenon.
And conservative women, I think a lot of it, what's been interesting is that there's this new narrative of reclamation of the feminine, especially within the black community as black women, because obviously it's been like, how do I say, sold as this, obviously not sold, let me give it some, you know, credit.
Yeah,
like, though, especially as a black woman, like, the world continuously with misogyny, racism, all of them stuff, all the isms, has stripped you of your femininity. Like, yeah. I think has forced women to be, you know, to not be equal to their white counterparts and stuff. So there's been this whole movement of...
Shout out to Bell Hooks. I mean, Ain't I a Woman, the whole...
Read Bell Hooks. So there's been this whole movement, and I've had this conversation, especially with a lot of, like, my like black girlfriends and stuff, about, you know, reclaiming your feminine, especially in hetero relationships, where, you know, there's often this feeling where, you know, as black women you always have to be strong, you can't be soft, you can't be, you know, especially with other black men. And it's been interesting because I understand it, I understand the empowerment in it, but I think it's also now being co-opted to a thing of, you know, if you're not feminine as a woman, then you don't love yourself. Like, you know, like, you know, especially, yeah, like, I think there's, like, you're either insecure, you know, and...
But that's, again, goes back to the list.
The list.
And, like,
And also, yeah. I think what's interesting, one thing that's been interesting is who can be promiscuous. Because I feel like there's been a double standard in terms of what is it, who's acceptably, when they're promiscuous, quote unquote, who can be sexually empowered and who cannot. I feel like there's a very big difference.
But going back to, like, the policing of women's promiscuity, but in relation to, oh, I'm quotation, saving myself, and therefore I'm gonna get something out of this. But whereas women who don't save themselves, in quotations, saving themselves in like the religious connotation, connoting to the idea of like being a virgin.
That's what's interesting about the whole concept of virginity and saving oneself. It's also taken a non-religious element in terms of, you know, the whole concept of don't sleep with someone on the first date, or, you know, don't put out. Like, yeah, sorry. I don't know where it's going with that. That was the end of my sentence. Why do you think, I guess, in the context of London, in especially in our generation, do you think there's a rise of conservatism?
But I think there's a sentiment that there's a growing loneliness epidemic. Like, we hear about it all the time. But I think it's more poignant. I can never say that word. P-O-I-G-N-A-N-D.
Poignant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people are more going towards thinking that a romantic relationship can fill that void, but also because of the pervasiveness of it online, everybody's getting into relationship, everybody's being loved in some way or another, dating apps are failing, people are kind of clinging on to these conservative ideals, kind of like in a religious way, that it would save them. So if I follow these steps, this will make me not only better than other people, but then bettering my chances of finding my person, and therefore I won't be lonely.
Then what you highlight is, like, really, like you said, the loneliness epidemic. And I don't know, I think there's also an overlap intersection with the reemergence of fem cells. Because I don't know, I just feel like I find myself often on the internet, and like you said, I see videos like that where it's a bunch of women bashing other women who they think are quite, like, don't meet the ideal standards of what a good woman is, and they feel like, and they don't understand why they themselves have not found love or found their partner. And I'm just like, sometimes I find myself being like, isn't this just a fem cell? Like, but I just think, what's the solution? And so, what are our tips for uninternalizing misogyny?
Yeah, we should write a new list.
I guess since our discussion earlier this term, I've reflected on a lot. Oh, girl. Oof. I was going through
therapy.
Inflation.
No job. Redundancy. Great flub.
So, sorry, as I was saying, what I've come to do is surround myself with people who align with me. And that's very hard,
because
especially when you are in friendship groups, long-term friendship groups, you don't all grow the same, and that's okay. I think one thing that needs to be, and why I think internalized misogyny probably manifests, is that there's this hesitancy to accept that the way people move about their life is not the same way that you move about it. Girls,
what is it that you don't like about yourself, and why don't you like those things about yourself, and how did you come to learn to not like these things about yourself?
I'm gonna say something, but disclaimer, Stephanie can edit it out if it's too on the nose and too shady. I have recently, you know, become, in the recent years, I've become more confident in myself, and recently single and ready to mingle. And so that has meant that I, maybe in contrast to certain people, I'm not anxious or shy to talk to men, because I don't approach them with this level of end goal. This is, you know, like, you're just a person at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I'll speak to you with the same confidence I speak to anyone. Period.
Yeah, period.
And, you know, sometimes that goes a bit funny. And, you know, yeah, especially when you're funny and you're young, it can be misconstrued. And I think, like, girl, go for it. Stop holding up, stop seeing women as competition, and stop holding men as a prize. Because I think TBH, that's the reason why you're not getting to combat. Okay, let me say this in more PC terms. Especially if you find yourself the root cause of your internalized, because I think the root causes can vary, but if one of the main root causes of your internalized misogyny is because you feel like men don't give you attention and you are seeking love from men, which is fine, that's normal. Everyone, you're human, you seek love.
Yeah, fine.
But if the main reason that if that's the main reason why you then hold women as opposition and critique women and all that stuff, take a break, touch grass, speak to a man.
So during my master's, yes, I've made friends with two straight men. Shout out to Robin and Josh. Okay, I've made friends with two straight men. Straight cis men.
Yes. Race anonymous.
Race irrelevant. Race
post-racial.
Post-racial world, guys. Post-racial world.
It's getting so crazy. Anyways, yes.
Robin and Josh. But being friends with them has made me realize, like, they're human beings. They study this. They like this. They listen to this kind of music. They watch movies.
Mm.
And then by doing that, I was able to become, like, I feel like we have a meaningful friendship.
Mm.
Don't you?
Josh, Robin, comment.
Are we friends? So I'm friends with these guys. They don't exist.
I just think also one thing that also goes hand in hand with that is, if you're going to uninternalize your misogyny and, or if you want to, actually, I was going to say something, but if you are someone who finds yourself critiquing women and wanting to hold your, one form of internalized misogyny, let me say this, is that I found is, and they'll do this for the sake of love and being like, I know the value of my friend and you want to hold them up to standards, which is fine. If that's a relationship you have, which is a relationship I have with my friends, which is holding us to certain standards, which,
yeah,
hold the men to the same standard. Because some of y'all be having amazing friends. Some of your friends be on the, like, are on their way to winning a Nobel Prize. But your high school friend can't even spell his name?
What if he's dyslexic?
I just think to men, if you are an ally and also have related to some of the things we've spoken about, hold your male counterparts to the same standard. Because some of your male counterparts need to be in jail. Oh, sorry.
Yes, but it's true.
Also, I think a big part of, sorry, last point, with, when you're kind of dealing through the hard things, not just internalized misogyny, but just hard things in life, I think nowadays it feels like you can't speak about it because I feel like everyone is all woke and has, mm-hmm, you know, dealt with their issues. No one is, like, really dealing with internalized racism anymore. Like, I feel like it's so, like, 2012. But, you know, like, I feel like there's this image that you have to come present yourself as your best self online or just in person because there's so much access. Which, yes, there's access, utilize it, but don't be afraid to talk about it. Like, internalized misogyny is not something that just goes away in a day. Like, it gets
the same way with internalized racism.
Yeah, especially as women, as you get older, it becomes more complex. The things you deal with are very different. The pressures that society puts on you are very different.
Yeah.
So give yourself that leeway, but also speak up. Don't be quiet. And to hold Steffi and I recently of something, I hope we've moved past it, because I feel like reflecting, it was kind of a form of internalized misogyny. We used to do this thing where the Bechdel test.
Ooh. Oh.
Because I think that's something to call ourselves on. For, yeah, you who don't know what the Bechdel test is, Stephanie.
Okay.
Google moment. Cue the elevator music.
Two things. Google says the Bechdel test, also known as the whatever, is a simple is a simple measure of female representation in film and other media. It assesses whether a work features at least two named female characters who have a conversation with each other that is not about a man. While primarily used for film, it's also applied in other forms of media. So
disclaimer, though, that this test has since been rendered redundant because it's not an accurate representation of how well female representation is done. It's also just, it feeds into misogyny to some extent. Stephanie and I, because we clearly were dealing with a lot of internalized misogyny, not looking back. And that's okay. Yeah. We would do this thing where whenever we, especially because we were both going through boy relationship related crisis. Like, I was fresh out of a breakup. You were dealing through some other stuff too.
What stuff?
Okay, you weren't dealing with shit. And so we would find ourselves obviously talking about that, our relationships with men.
But alas, be kinder to yourself, because I feel like once you're kinder to yourselves, you can be kinder to others. It's also like a manifestation of how you see yourself, if that's how you look at these other women. Like,
first point is, internalized misogyny is a long journey. It gets more nuance, it changes, it evolves. Give yourself the leeway to realize that you're not going to solve it in a year. Number two is, allow yourself to be in the pursuit for love, desire love. It's, you know, don't shame yourself for wanting to have love, even if it's with a man. Don't pursue or desire love at the detriment to others. Lastly,
yeah,
be free. You got one life, yo.
Thank you for listening, everyone. And if you have
follow us, tweet us, subscribe.
Thank you, Nadia, for joining into the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
You made it worthwhile.
Don't let conservatism win. Protect everyone. Sorry, I was gonna say woman, but then I was like, that's exclusionary.
No, protect everyone.
And keep the dialogue open.
Yes.
Stop policing women.
It's like a chant. Stop policing women. Stop policing women. Okay. All right. Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Wait, is that the after? Do you guys end with bye?
Yeah.